Hi, guys, and welcome back to the Wealth and Wellness Studio, the podcast that's helping you get healthier, wealthier, hotter, and happier. This week, I have the honor of having Celine Dior on the podcast. She is the owner of a multi-million dollar clothing brand called House of Vite that's been featured on Forbes, Vogue. This girl runs triathlon. She's been featured on BC's Business 30 Under 30. She's a snowboarder, and she built it all from scratch, bootstrapping it herself. She's been through a journey of highs and lows, and I feel like we're going to learn so much from her on this episode. We talk about her journey of building her clothing brand and the process of mastering e-commerce and all of the challenges that came with scaling her team, the setbacks that she's faced along the way, and how she's been able to rebuild it, what her day-to-day life looks like, the habits that have made her successful. If we believe in work-life balance, is it a pro to be a woman in business? And so much more advice that she wishes that she had gotten 5 years ago. And we cover a ton. Like the best business podcast to listen to. This is going to be a fun episode. So grateful that she made the time to come on the podcast this week. If you guys have not already, make sure that you watch the video version of this podcast on YouTube, Wealth and Wellness Studio, or you can also find us on Instagram, Wealth and Wellness Studio, and DM us what guests you want to have on for future podcasts, what you guys want to learn about. We're really here to help you just get a little bit closer to building your dream life. And enjoy the episode. Oh, also, if you enjoy it, be sure to leave us a review. It really helps us so much in growing this podcast and keeping everything free. So thank you guys so much for your support. And without further ado, let's go to the conversation. Sweet. Well, welcome, Celine, on the podcast. I'm so excited to have you, and I'm so excited for this conversation. I love your name, by the way. You have you genuinely have a name that I'm like, that is going in the history books. Like, it sounds like you're meant to be a businesswoman. I love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been stalking your clothing brand, Vite, and I've been looking at your YouTube videos and your account, and you have so many cool items, by the way, like the Vite puffer bag I'm obsessed with. I know it's sold out right now, and all of the other, your clothing looks amazing, and your YouTube. And I saw that you lived in the office for a year, while you were building it, and have had this crazy journey of up and downs building this huge brand. How old were you when you started Vite, and what is the story behind the brand? Who are you? How did this happen?
Yeah, I started it when I was 18, right out of high school. I used to swim competitively, and the idea was just designing something that I wanted in my life that wasn't on the market at the time. So I was traveling in the summer, and I was hoping to get new bikinis for, I think I was going to Cuba. Yeah. And I couldn't really find anything on the market that would stay on me. So functional in the water, because I'm very active in the water. I would dive, swim, surf, and then, but also look sexy. Yeah. And at the time, I think Victoria's Secret was one of the big players. And their swim design was more kind of looked like a bra, but swimsuit material. And then their website was not inclusive at all. So I remember at the time I had kind of just quit swimming as well. And I was going through a lot of weight changes and just feeling very insecure about my own body.
That happens so much with athletes too. Nobody talks about the when you quit competitive sports, the change. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're eating the same amount, but you're no longer training the same amount. And your appetite, your stomach just hasn't shrunk yet. So I was just going through so much changes in my body and mentally too. That's really tough. So I just for fun started designing something that I wanted to wear, a bikini and then a one piece as well. And less than 6 months, we were sampling during that process. And December 1st, 2016, we launched. I was in university first year at the time, right before finals we launched. And I don't think I really studied for finals up until after the company launched. Yeah. And then I went back to studying and I passed, but it wasn't
on the back burner.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how the company started.
That's, first of all, I think what you were talking about, I feel like there's definitely like two types of girls on the beach as well. Like there's the people that like all they're doing is sitting. And then there's those of us that like, I've always been the same way of like active. Like I want to be in the water. I want to be doing the sports. I want to be running around. Yeah. And like swimsuits just aren't made for that. So that's like, anyway, that's a really, like, I love that that's what like launched the whole thing.
Yeah.
Also it's, yeah. So what, I guess you talked a little bit about like brands not having like inclusivity and like what are the core values of Vite? Like what is like the why behind your clothing brand?
When we launched, I knew I wanted to be an inclusive brand. So when we were looking for models to shoot our e-commerce photos, I actually asked at the time some of my friends or just normal body
everyday
type.
People.
Just
yeah.
Everyday people, not models. I didn't go to a modeling agency. Back then, there was no influencers, so didn't do any of that. And I just knew that that was one of my ethos. No Photoshop, real bodies. And that has always been what we are about. And because we currently only still have women clothing only, so we're big into women empowerment, we did a lot of things. Like throughout the years of our business, we hosted a women in business competition as well. 2 years in a row in collaboration with Meowbox, which is one of my other friends. She owns Meowbox, and we just did like a joint woman in business competition, just our, like our own thing. And we had women in business, you know, there are certain criteria. They pitch us their idea. They submit an application. We actually kind of like Shark Tank style did it on IG Live so people can watch their pitch. And then we gave away like $10,000 plus mentorship. All that. There's like three prizes. So we did that for 2 years in a row. So we're always big on supporting women in different ways.
Yeah.
And just doing the most we can to help women feel more confident in designing clothes that fit different body types and having fabric that is like buttery soft that makes them feel confident and to just empower them to do whatever sport they want to do in our clothing. And then we also hosted a bunch of community events. So workout class, beach cleanup, that type of stuff. Sick. Involve our community as much as we can.
So did you have an entrepreneur background? Like where did you grow up being exposed to entrepreneurship or was this something that you just like, I have a dream, I have a vision, I'm going to do this?
I think growing up, my mom sort of did random little things and never really had a job that she stuck with. She also tried to have her own clothing brand, I think when I was 13 or 14, for a very like short couple months. But I did watch her merchandise product listed online, like what that process kind of looks like. And my uncle actually is also a big inspiration for me. He's been in e-commerce for 11 years, 12 years now. And he was more of a mentorship like mentor role when I started the business. He was like, oh, you're starting this thing. Like he was already in e-com for 3-4 years by then. So a lot of like what I wanted to do, I asked him, he taught me a lot, still now teaches me a lot. So I think I had those influences, but never went to business school. After I launched the business, I kind of stopped going to school. I just took a break.
Yeah. What I always say is I feel like unless you're going to a school where you have a mentor that's like very specific to like what you want to do, if your business professor has never owned a business or they haven't worked in the field in like so many years, like what are you going to learn? Like you learn so much more out in the field, making the mistakes, like doing it rather than, 100%. Wait, so from the beginning, was this something, did you ever see Vite becoming as big as it did? Like take us on that journey from like the start. Did you bootstrap it? Did you get investors? Like was it a side project? Like where did you have this vision from the beginning or how did it start?
No, it was always something that I wanted to do for fun. And in the very beginning, I put in $2,500, maybe $3,000 saved up from lifeguarding, purchased our first PO and always been bootstrapped, never took investor money.
Especially in this industry. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Later on when we were growing, we took some loans from the bank to hire, order a bigger PO, but always bootstrapped. And it was definitely not easy, but I think that being able to be bootstrapped in a way is a blessing because you needed to learn how to be scrappy And
you are working every part of the business too.
Exactly.
Like you are the marketing team, you are the finance team, like you're doing all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how fast did Vitae take off?
I would say we grew pretty steady and slow for the first couple of years, but we were always growing 50%, doubling every year. And when COVID hit, that was kind of when our brand took off even more because everybody was shopping online. They were on their phones all the time.
And were you online only?
Yeah, we were online only, big on social media, creating content. So that kind of just helped propel our business forward organically when COVID hit. And yeah, we kind of always grew organically through influencer marketing, affiliate marketing, word of mouth. We just have like really good quality products. So people just keep coming back and buying. Building community and fostering that has always been our number one priority. So people know that when they're buying from us, it's not just a product. It's you're buying into something you support and you align yourself with. Yeah. And I think that's really important for brands.
100%. Like when you sell the why, then you keep your customers forever versus if all you're doing is competing on clothing, like there's always a different competitor in the field. But when you sell them into a why, that's everything. So that's super cool. And I think that really shows in like all of the content that you guys produce. And like there's a feeling that you see when you look at your website, when you look at your clothes, when you look at your stuff. So that's sick. So I know that after – so when did you guys launch in-store? Because were you online? And then how did you decide to do in-store? And what advice would you have for like people who are wanting to start – I guess these are two questions. But for people who are wanting to start clothing brands or get into e-commerce, I know that some people have this like fear of like, oh, well, it's an oversaturated space or like there's so many different companies. Like was that ever a thing in your mind or were you just like, no, there's room for me. I'm going to create a space for me in this industry.
I think in the very beginning, because I was so young and kind of spontaneous, I didn't do a lot of market research into who are my competitors, what's the numbers that they could be doing, what's their website visitor amount monthly, and what are they doing. Like, I didn't do a lot of competitor research, and in a way, it really helped me to just go for it because I think if I did do what business schools teach you to do, like do your competitor research, do all that, I think part of me, especially as an 18-year-old, I probably would have been feeling defeated and feel like, oh, I wouldn't, you know, I could just never beat them or be where they are. So in a way, I think that helped me just to start.
Yeah.
And I think down the line, especially after COVID, there's a lot more clothing brands that popped up. I think it's not something that people should be scared about because of saturation. There's always distinct factors that you can implement in your brand. Branding is a big one. People don't buy products just for products anymore. They want to buy into your vision, who you are, what you stand for. And everybody has a unique story, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to lean into that, especially when you're building a brand. It may not be clothing, but I think it's important for founders and or team members to be kind of the face of it in a way to show that human interaction and that face, just like we are real people running the brand. We're not big companies that are faceless.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. I also think that clothing is actually one of the easiest things to start because there's so much competition and so many people are doing it. That also means there's a lot of information online. True. Where you can find on YouTube, read a blog, ChatGPT, and in a way, it's easier for you to start. And also, because there's so many competition, it's probably one of the products that have a lower minimum order quantity.
Yep.
That means you don't need to spend, you don't need to order 500 hoodies to start. You could order 30.
100%.
If you find the right manufacturer. So in a way, it's a good, like, dip your toes in. Try starting your own brand, go through the process of like coming up with branding, building a website, thinking about marketing, talking to customers, customer service, learning that. And maybe clothing is not your forever product or business idea, but it's a great place to start.
Well, and I think we live in the day and age where it's truly incredible because like anyone can start a business. And I think that some people still don't like realize that. Like everyone has the power. Like it takes a lot more work than you think it does. Like whatever work you think it's going to take or like money it's going to take, like it's always going to be a little bit harder. But if your heart is truly in it, it's like, well, I think it's worth it. You know, you go through all the stress, but it's worth it. And, but yeah, I think the other thing too is that what stops so many people, I think, from starting businesses is from feeling like they need to have an original idea to start a business, when a lot of times it's like, just take what someone else is doing and do it like 1% better, or add your own touch to it. Because it's like, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Like you don't need to come up with like a new article of clothing or like a new, like you can just find something that's already working and just do it a little bit better.
Yeah. 100%.
Also, guys, Celine has been so nice and given us a discount code for shopping on Vite. So if you're a girl, go to Vite and use the code Wealth and Wellness at checkout for 10% off of your order. Let's get back to the episode. Okay, so what has your experience been like? I guess actually before we do that, if someone's listening, Kieran, maybe we have someone who's like, owns an e-commerce company, or they have a clothing brand. What are like three, I know this is, you probably have a lot to say on this, but like, what are a couple of like key things that you've learned just from experience, whether it's like increasing order value or just like some things that have like made like a really big difference for your business that you're like, man, if I could talk to myself when I was starting this brand, like, I just wish I would have known a couple of these things when it comes to like the business side. And
The first one that comes to mind is hire slow, fire fast. Mm-hmm. I was really young when I was growing the team. We went from 6 people to 20 people in a span of 6 months, and I was 21 at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was just probably one of the harder years of running a business for me, because I felt so insecure and uncertain about myself as a leader, because I was hiring people that were older than me with way more experience than what they're doing in operations, finance, and I have like no idea what they're doing, or kind of like, are they doing a good job? Exactly. Yeah. Like I didn't go to school, don't know any of it. This is my first business. So that was really hard. And I would say if you read the book about Steve Jobs, he always talks about following your intuition. Mm-hmm. And if I were to go back and tell myself that, just to listen to your gut more in business, whenever you're making a big business decision, or should I launch this collection, or is this the right person that is working for me? You know, okay, I've given them a couple of chances. Like, you know, we've had talks. It's still kind of something doesn't feel right. Like, listen to that and go with it. And it might not be logically explainable, but it's always right. So those two things, listen to your gut, fire fast, hire slow. And the third one I would say is customer first, always. I never had customer service experience when I first started the business. And it was just me running the business. I was supply chain, I was marketing, I was customer support.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And because you are the founder, it's your baby. And I was 18 at the time. I remember I had a few reviews or comments in like Facebook groups or something. And the story that the customer was telling was actually completely false.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. It happens all the time. Like, you, like people don't understand. And that's why, like, sometimes you buy something and you read a bad review and you're like, oh, okay, like this service must be shit. But actually, there are more people that just isn't telling the truth just because, like, they're not happy about maybe something completely unrelated, and they make up stories. So there's always like two sides to everything. And at the time, I was young, no experience, and I felt the need to just defend myself. But what I didn't realize, it's like, I am the company, and when I'm saying something, like, I'm saying on behalf of the company. So actually, I was really defensive, and that lesson I learned, it was a hard lesson to learn. And then when I had money to hire people, hiring for customer service was the first person I hired, because I just knew I needed to remove myself from answering any customer service related things, because you're just so tied to it and you feel personally attacked when 100%. You shouldn't. And from that point onwards, like, customer serve like customer service and customer satisfaction first always has been a big ethos in our company. And we always get compliments now. I'm like, oh my God, like, thank you for answering me like right away or solving this or making an exception. I was like, if the customer is happy, they will spread good stories about us and they'll come back and buy.
Yeah.
So that was a hard lesson I had to learn when I first started.
I feel like it's really hard too, to like not take it personally. Like just, it's so hard, especially when it's your child and there's just angry people out there. Like there's people who like, it has nothing to do with you, but they'll just take it out on your brand. And especially when it's like unfair or untrue. I feel like it's really hard to be a sensitive person in business. I'm not saying this about you, but like for myself, I know like with my marketing agency, like at the beginning, it was really hard for me when like there was like a client or like some sort of issue and it wasn't my fault, but it turns into an issue. And then like, it's really hard for, like, I would lose so much sleep over it. And I would just like stay up, like thinking about it, like replaying it. Like it is, it takes, I honestly think like doing business in general takes so much emotional stability because you're going to have those like really high months. And then you're going to have like something that's completely out of your control. Like maybe you have like super high revenue, you start scaling. And then like, I know you mentioned that like you scaled really quickly at the beginning. And I think that this is like a pattern that I know a lot of my friends are entrepreneurs and have their own companies. But like my boyfriend is going through the same thing right now where he was like, he made so much, he had a lot of success in his business and started scaling. But then they scaled too fast and then the revenue dropped and it was just this like super, I feel like it's a pattern that happens a lot to people and you just don't know. Like, and it's so hard because like afterwards, like you like can kick yourself and be like, well, I should have known, but like, there's no way that you can know until you go through it. Exactly. What was that experience like of like scaling fast and then having to like scale back? Like, what did you learn through that? And what has that taught you moving forward?
Yeah, I think when COVID happened, a lot of e-commerce owners were kind of just living in a bubble. We just had this thought in our head that was like, okay, you know, everything moved online. People are shopping on their phones, on their laptop. Why would they ever go back to in person? So of course, this growth for e-commerce is just going to be exponential for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. But now thinking back, yeah, like you said, it's really easy to just be like, obviously people are going to go back to in person because they want that in-person connection after COVID ends. But at the time, there's no way of knowing.
And you don't know how long it's going to last.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So we grew very quickly and I distinctly remember like where I got this idea from. I was watching like Gary Vee video and Gary Vee is great. Lots of great marketing advice and all that. And one video specifically, he said, if you want to grow from 7 to 8 figures, it's about the people. And I still believe that, but I just took that very literally in a way. I was like, oh yeah, you know, okay, I need to just hire as much like people as fast as possible. It was really hard for me to grow at the time, scaling, hiring so quickly because we didn't have the infrastructure set up in place.
Yep.
So every time we hired someone, it just felt like taking one step forward, two steps back because our employee handbook, like SOPs, nothing was written. And so every time we onboarded someone, it was like training somebody new from the ground up. Whereas
making it up as you go.
Yeah, have these things set up, ready to go. You onboard someone. Okay, there are steps. They go through, you know, meeting with their managers, read through all the SOPs. They know exactly who to report to, when the meetings are happening and all that. And we didn't. So then everything was kind of like figuring out on the fly. But it wasn't for one person. It was for like 15.
That is a lot also on you because I feel like it's one thing to know how to run a company, like to do things yourself, but then to train other people how to do it.
Yeah.
That's heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, that was hard. And I was a leader that was very emotional and sensitive as well. Yeah. And whenever something didn't go well or whatnot, I took it to heart. And I think I also people pleased a lot in a way. Like I wanted to be friends with everybody that was like in our company and foster this like home vibes for our team culture, which was amazing. And I think it definitely, like, good and bad. The good is, like, everybody worked together as a team amazingly. Like, nobody had – there was zero drama in the company, which is
That's great.
I preached all the time. But then when it comes to, leader and the team, I felt like I'm missing that gap because now I'm like almost equals. Seen as equals. And when I give feedback and whatnot, it's harder now to draw that line between hanging out after work as friends versus like being at work and, hey, what happened? Like, you didn't hand this up in time. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard for me to learn. And then when I had to scale back, that just like ripped my heart out because these people are now part of the family. They're my friends. And I feel as a leader, you feel very responsible for their well-being, you know, mm-hmm. their salary and all that. And when I did have to cut people, it was really tough. I cried a lot, but it was also necessary. And if I were to do one thing differently going back is when I knew I needed to scale down the team and downsize, I should have done it almost all at once. Mm-hmm. Like I knew, for example, we had 20 people and I knew I needed to cut down to 6, but I dragged out that process to over a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And in a way it was really bad for team morale because imagine if you were in their shoes, you're like, 1 month, this person goes, 2 months later, another person goes, and you're kind of like, when am I next? So I should have just like ripped the Band-Aid off, done it all at once and just say like, hey, we have 6 people left and it's going to be tough, but we're not going anywhere, six, and we're just going to make it work and just grind it out. So I were to do it differently, I would go back and do that.
Yeah, I just want to say I truly have so much respect for you because I feel like being the age of 18 to like 25 is confusing enough as it is. Like just like being a human, like figuring out, like I feel like that's such a formative age. Like, who am I? What am I going to do? Like, okay, like what are my values? Like, it's just like such a formative time in our lives. And to feel all that pressure of like, okay, wait, I have a team. Like it's incredible. And I also feel like you've set yourself up so well for the rest of your life because you've had to go through these like hard lessons like and experiences like so early on that people like don't deal with until they're like much older. And like you have to go through, like shit hits the fan at some point. So like you have to learn it if you're ever gonna do it. And it's extremely like impressive to be going through all of like the personal growth at the same time as like leading a team. And I think that everything, like all the quote unquote mistakes that you're talking about, like they're inevitable. Like there's truly, I think the hard thing too is like, there's no way to learn it unless you do it. Like you have to go through it to do it. So anyway, that's really cool. And I think so many business owners listening can either relate now or will relate in the future when they scale to that point. Okay. So being like, again, like I said before, it's truly not super common to have like a young woman your age, like who's built this massive of a business. So what do you, I guess I'm curious about your experience. What has it been like being a woman in business? And like, have you ever like walked into a business meeting or like talked to people and like not been taken seriously? Or like what has your experience been like for you?
I feel like there are pros and cons.
Yeah.
And I've experienced both sides of it.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the feeling of not enoughness and that people don't respect me is actually mostly coming internally.
Yeah.
You know, as a woman, sometimes we just feel like we're not good enough. Like mm-hmm. a very common thing is like a lot of women are usually more creative. And they're better at content and marketing and all that. So when it came to finances, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And I feel very helpless and just not good at that. And you then feel like when you walk into a room, especially in a business setting, most of the people are going to ask you about your numbers. Mm-hmm. How, like, you know, what's the conversion rate on your website? Like, how many people are coming through Facebook ads versus email? I'm like,
what's your EBITDA?
Exactly. I have no idea. It's all feeling based. No, not all, but
no, but it works. That's the thing too, is like, there's just different approaches to like building a business. And like, anyway, it's so relatable and it's so true what you're saying. So
keep going. But so in that sense, I feel like there, for a while, I felt like I wasn't good enough, didn't know enough. And when I walked into a room and talk about a certain topic, I felt that I could have more respect, but I think ultimately that comes down to how I see myself and that I'm not confident in my abilities and who I am. Less so about what other people are portraying towards me, you know?
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, I feel like because as a woman, it was in a way easier for me to approach mentors because everyone is kind of like wants to help like women in business, especially young women in business. Like you get so many grants for it. Like the government is helping you. Society is kind of like helping, like providing a lot of help in a way as well. So I feel like once I got past the first couple years, I really didn't do any networking. That's also something that I wish I did earlier. And when I finally stepped out of my shell and was like out networking, meeting people more, I feel like actually it helped me learn a lot from other people because they kind of had their guard down in a way. They're like, oh, it's just a young girl trying to learn. They don't know anything. So like, just let me tell them my experience.
Yeah.
And that has been really, really helpful for me.
I love your take on this. I was really curious what your experience would have been like, but I feel like two things. I love that number one, like you're the ownership of like maybe like some of like the challenges that I face are like because of like things in my internal world. Cause like I'm going through that like so often where it's like, okay, like am I love looking internally to see like how that's contributing to like the challenges that I'm facing. So that's like number one. But number two is I don't know if you listen to Layla and Alex Hormozi at all, but I listened to them a bunch and Layla has this episode talking about being a woman in business. And she was saying that truly like it's a superpower in her mind because she's like, of course you have like, but I think that's true for anyone. Like there's moments like where you won't be taken seriously or they're like, oh, like where's the owner? And it's like, I'm right here. Yeah. But she's like, overall, like people are willing to give information to me and help me in a way that they just don't do for Alex because they don't see me as a threat. And she's like, honestly, like, I think it's such a superpower because you can walk, it's exactly what you said. You walk into a room, you can ask for help and people don't, they just don't see you as a threat and like not in a bad way. It's just like, they're willing to divulge information and help. And so I think that's a really good perspective and and I love that that's been your experience, but so walk us through like a day to day in your life. Just walk us through a day to day look like. I know that it's just give me a couple like day to day scenarios that you have. Like what habits have you kind of like put in your life that have helped you think with your work ethic and your success? And I know it looks different on a day to day. So
yeah, the day to day definitely looks very different. I would say the day to day looks a lot different now versus 3 years ago when we were growing versus day one when I was grinding really hard. I would say that earlier days in the business, it was a lot. It was me doing everything. So it was working 24/7, nonstop, checking emails at dinner, everywhere I go, answering customer service emails. Then when we were growing, my day consisted of a lot of meetings, like a lot of meetings. To the point where I look at my calendar and I'm like, I can't fit another meeting in this week. And it took me a lot of learning and adjusting to kind of like most maximize my time and my calendar, because when you're growing a team, you have to do department meetings, then you have to do management meetings, then you have to do one-on-ones, and then you have to talk to outside relations, for example, marketing agency, email agency, Facebook ads and whatnot. So it was very quickly filled up with meetings, which I later on realized that I actually hated. And that's the thing. It's like it's so mentally draining, and you should be prepping for a meeting too. So then there's time before the meeting that you need to prep, then go into the meeting, then you go into the next one. So that was really hard, and I realized that that was something that I didn't want to do. And then I had to learn how to delegate a lot more of what I'm doing on the day-to-day. So when I downsized, I had to do a lot more of the day-to-day again. So I kind of went through that phase of like kind of doing everything again, but not everything. And then later on, feeling burnt out of like, now I have to post every day. It's me again. Or what is this content that we need to make? So learning to delegate what drains your energy.
Yeah.
And focusing on the things that bring you energy. And now my day-to-day looks a lot more flexible. Like today, I actually haven't really worked. I just went for coffee with two people, networked a bit. And then later on, I need to do some admin, plan content for tomorrow that we need to film. But yeah, I would say for me, some habits that I've adopted now. First thing I wake up, I meditate.
Yeah.
And I kind of lost that last year because I was traveling a lot. And it was harder when you were traveling. Oh, now that I'm back into a routine, yeah, I'm trying to really just take a moment every morning, sit down, and just listen to your body and see how you're feeling and meditate, calm the mind. And then write down your to-dos, like what you kind of have to do. Some people do it the night before. I kind of do in the morning. And then the second thing is like move my body, kind of like, I guess, first thing in the morning. That's really important to me. And just, I tried different productivity hacks, like time blocking. That's a really popular one that I was really trying to do for a while. Ultimately, what I've realized over the last 2 years is that going with the flow in a way has served me so much more than just trying to implement all these productivity hacks. And it sounds so like unintuitive, but for me, I can't explain it, but it works. You just wake up and you brain dump everything you have to do. And I feel like if you just took a second to listen to your gut, you know what you need to do first and what needs to be prioritized and what it contributes to the bigger vision of your company or this goal that you're working on, and what are some mundane tasks that you don't want to do, and can you offload that?
I love your cat.
Yeah, I know.
That's so cute. No, okay. I actually want to talk a little bit more about this, because I feel like ever since I started working full-time for myself like around a year and a half ago, it's so wild because first of all, I agree with you, because I think sometimes if you put stuff on your to-do list or you time block it out, it almost adds more stress when something comes up that you had to take care of, but now you feel behind for these other tasks that you put on your schedule, but now you feel like, or at least I feel sometimes I'm like, not a failure, but like, I'm just like, well, I didn't get everything done that it's like, they would have been fine if they were moved to tomorrow, maybe a couple of those tasks, but it like can add extra stress. So first of all, that makes a lot of sense to me. Second, I was going to ask you about like movement in the morning, because I know like for me, something that I've been working through a lot in this last year is feeling guilty. When I wake up, like I feel like, especially on days when there's so much on my to-do list, like I have a ton of client tasks I need to get done, or just like urgent stuff, like I almost feel guilty for moving my body first thing in the morning, which I'm like really working through not doing, because I feel like I'm like, I have things I need to do. And if I like didn't wake up in time and I'm like still at the gym and it's like 9 or 10 a.m. and I'm like, wait, but like this person's texting me, this thing needs to get taken care of. Like, have you faced that? Have you ever? I'm just asking because I'm really working through like not feeling guilty when I'm not working, which is like such a bad thing. But for
No, I go through the same thing. I'm such a morning person. Yeah. And for a while, I was really battling with, I'm the type of person, if I don't move in the morning, I'm not going to work out in the afternoon.
Yep.
It's just, I just know I'm not going to move. And for a lot of people, it's not the case. But for me, it was really hard to deal with, because I felt like I only had like 6 hours of prime time in the morning to either get a workout in and work or work and check off as much as I can. So
I feel that.
That was like an ongoing battle for a while. And then I think I just learned to, I mean, give yourself grace. And when I work out now, I just turn on do not disturb, because same thing, Slack messages, emails would start popping up and I'm like, oh shit, like I need to answer this. And then I'm like sitting on the Smith machine and like replying to this person when I probably could have been like out of the gym 15 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and then I also found different types of movements, like for example, yoga or Pilates or whatever. It's something that I actually prefer to do at night more. So on the days that I want to wake up and get work done first thing in the morning, I would schedule those workouts later on in the day. And if it is a day for endurance training or working out like weights, then I would allocate time to do that like in the morning and then like get into work. But I think we're all guilty of just when you start your day, all these thoughts start coming in, which I think is why it's really important to meditate, because yes. all your to-dos start coming in. But just starting the day with a more peaceful mind, you're able to just handle situations better throughout the day and be like, no, right now it's me time. I'm going to get an hour workout in. Whatever else, fire, I will put out after, you know?
Yeah. No, that's so good. And I also feel like what you were talking about, if I'm going to work out in the afternoon, it has to be scheduled because I'm not going to the gym. Like, I feel like yeah. I'm going to the gym, it has to be yeah. the morning. But yeah. if it's like a class that I'm, especially if I get a friend or someone to go to, exactly. then I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to show up. So it's going to, yeah. No, that yeah. makes so much sense. And I feel like it's, that's definitely something I'm still working on, and I probably will for a long time because I feel like I'm still early on in my journey. But okay, just like, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, so I only have like a couple more questions. But one of them is, I know you've been training for triathlons and been doing like endurance training and stuff like that, and I think that is so cool. So like, yeah, I guess at this point, and I know you snowboard and I know you have tons of like hobbies and stuff as well. So talk to me a little bit about like, what are some of the like non-business related things that Celine is like that you're working on and have for this year, and what inspired you to do triathlons and how has that been?
Yeah, I got into triathlon last year. I got into running last year as well, actually. I hated running. Running was like the thing that I just hated so much.
Yeah.
And what changed for me was beginning of last year, I got out of a 3-year relationship, and the 3 years was also like one of the hardest 3 years of the business. We went through a lot of growth, then we had to downsize, then it was just mentally a lot, both personally and in business. And I felt like after the relationship ended, it was sort of like an aha moment of like, whoa, like I lost myself mm-hmm. and who I am. And I don't really know who I am as a person. It was not only because of the relationship and losing yourself in the relationship. It was also because of the business. Mm-hmm. Vitae has been my baby for the last 8 years now. And
I've been saying it wrong this whole time. You should have corrected me.
It's fine. Vitae, yeah. And like 100% of my identity is tied to yeah. what I have built. And, you know, I put a lot of energy into it.
What's your and, baby? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when I kind of fell out of love a little bit over those last 3 years because it was really hard in the process, I also felt like I fell out of love with myself because I wasn't as passionate about it anymore and things mm-hmm. were harder. And when I woke up in the morning, it doesn't excite me the same way it did, you know, like 4 years ago. And it's kind of like, yeah, it's the burnout. It's kind of like, what's wrong with me? You know, like this thing was the thing I wanted to do for so long and you're doing it and you're not excited for it. Like mm-hmm. how come? And so last year, I actually took a bit of a break with e-commerce, which is why we kind of went into retail. I just was so burnt out with doing kind of the same thing over and over again for online. You know, yep. you design a new collection, you film content to hype it up, then you launch it, then you, you know, hope you sell as much as you can. Okay, if it's mm-hmm. not moving as fast, you got to send it to influencers, do other marketing, and then on repeat. Now, next yeah. collection, do the same thing all over again. And I felt really burnt out, especially after 6-7 years. So I took some time to travel and to find myself again and just really didn't work during those 4 months a lot and just kind of let the online run on its own.
That's amazing.
And I did stuff I love again. I went diving, scuba diving. I went to Japan for 7 weeks. I flew back to China to see my family, visit our manufacturer, didn't have a return flight, don't know where I was going next, and just kind of let my heart lead me to where I want to go. And last year, my life was living in flow a lot. And when I was traveling, I needed to still exercise. That's kind of how I picked up running. I was like, all I need is a pair of shoes.
Yeah, can do
and
it anywhere.
I can just run anywhere, wherever I'm traveling to. So I was running maybe 2 times a week, and just it was a great way to explore a city as well. Because you've never been to that city and you're kind of running through the different back alleys and whatnot and exploring the city that way. So that kind of made me fall in love with running a bit more. And I used to swim competitively. And then I was curious if triathlon was something that I could do. And then I looked at the distance and I was like, oh my God, I can't do this, because I was a sprinter. Then it was like always in the back of my mind. I was like, okay, no, like this idea is still here. Like, let me talk to somebody. So I just posted on my story and see if anyone has done triathlon, if I can talk to them. And a couple of people messaged me. So then I found this thing called sprint triathlon, which is half the distance of an Olympic tri. And I looked at the distance. It was 750 meter swim, 20K bike ride, and 5K run. I was like, I think I could do it. Swimming, no problem. 5K run, I do it twice a week. It's the biking. I was like, I mean, I can ride a bike, you know? So then I super impromptu signed up 30 days before the race. And then I trained really hard for 30 days. And then I did it Orange County. And I actually got second place, which I was like, didn't expect it. But it made me have a mission outside of my business. And for the longest time, the only goal or mission I had in life always had to do with business. It's like hitting this revenue goal or, you know, achieving X percent profit this year. I didn't have any goals outside of business that trained my discipline. And I used to be a competitive athlete, and I miss that feeling of just like training for something for so long, going to the swim meet, the whistle blows, you're swimming, you're giving your 110% for like 50 meters. And then you see yourself like, okay, I cut my time down by 1 second, or I got first place. And I've missed that feeling outside of business.
Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of got into triathlon, and it kind of reignited that again. And I found myself outside of business. It's like, who is Celine when she's not an entrepreneur? Like, what does she like to do? So yeah, I picked up triathlon, did a lot of scuba diving, did a lot of snowboarding this year, and just like trying to find myself outside of business, because that's not everything.
100%. And you started it so young too, that I feel like it, and obviously like the amount of work it takes to like really build it. Like, again, I don't think people realize like how much like you sacrifice to do it. So it's like when you're 18, it's like that's your whole adult life. So I think that's really cool that I think both things are cool, and it's there's seasons for everything. And it's funny though, hearing you talk, I have a very similar journey with triathlons. I'm not an endurance athlete. Like, honestly, I hate it. Like, every part of it. Yeah. But it's so like, I don't know. Like, I like doing hard things sometimes. I go through like seasons when it comes to like endurance training. I feel like I either like hate it or I'm like, wow, this feels really good. But I was such a horrible swimmer, and I'd never biked before. I had signed up for, this was when I was in college, but I signed up for a half Ironman having idea like what I signed up for. Like, it was so bad. And the swimming, like I trained for the swimming so I wouldn't drown, but I'm like not a good swimmer. And anyway, trained for the swimming. So I figured out how to swim the mile. That was like actually the hardest thing for me. And then the biking, I had never biked more than 20 miles in my life. And which is still a lot, like, but I had never done that. And definitely not like back to back. It was so bad, Celine, that so when I signed up for the race, like I didn't realize that it was going to be, I did it in Florida. Show up with my friends. I'd only trained in a pool. I didn't even have a proper swimming wetsuit. So I found like some wakeboarding wetsuit, and like, I couldn't like move my arms like past this, like survive that. Then there's all these old like grandparents that are just like kicking my ass like the whole time. Then I get on the bike. I was so dead last. Like I finished. It took me 4 hours. I was so like, I was the in last place doing it, but like to the point where like they shut down the snack table, you know, like the tables with the
water. Yeah.
I was so no watch, no phone, no water. Like, I was dying. And so I genuinely thought I'd like got lost, and that was like the end of time for me. And time passed like so slowly. So ended up finishing that. And then, the only reason I didn't finish dead last of the entire race was because someone passed out after the bike. So there was like two people after me, but I was like hobbling at the end of it. Anyway, I was like, I have so much respect for people to do this. Like, one, done, like did it. It was like, I can cross it off my list, but like, it is not my thing. Anyway, I was just, it's so funny when you're talking about like the fact that you got second place. I was like, wow, I'm like so glad you signed up, did it, and like had a good experience with it. Cause I feel like I did it so wrong. I like signed up, did it, and then was like, that was the hardest, worst. Of course, it's going to be hard and bad if you don't train, but I didn't train. It was just, it was so bad. Anyway, yeah. So funny. I love that you're into triathlons, and I don't know, maybe I'll give it another chance at some point in my life, but
I think you should. Maybe not a half Ironman distance, but yeah, like a sprint or an Olympic try. I feel like that's a good distance.
Maybe I'll have like more joy when I finish it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah. I love that. And I love, yeah, I think that physical movement too is just like such a good outlet, and like having an identity. I think identity in general, like it's so hard to figure out like who you are, like what do we tie our worth in? And it's like, I love that. And it's hard to find something to put your identity in that's like stable, because that like can't be taken away from you, right? Because like mm-hmm. revenue can change, like even yeah. athleticism, like your body changes, like your but it's really inspiring, and I feel like so many people can relate to like what you were talking about with relationships. Like I know so many people, I think everyone at some point in their life goes through it where they like lose who they are and then find it again, and I think it's like a continual journey. So mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing like all of your stories. My last question for you is yeah. what is like, what's next for Celine? Like what is your, so on this podcast, really like the idea of it is to help people build their dream lives, and everyone has like a different goal. So like for one person, it's going to be building a huge business, but maybe for someone else, it's reaching an athletic goal. For someone else, it's just like, I want to have a regulated nervous system, or maybe it's like a combination of like, I know that's a big one for me this year, but, yeah. What was I going to say? So the idea is just to inspire people to like get a little bit closer to building their dream lives. And yeah, and get happier, healthier, wealthier, and hotter. Like that's like the idea of the whole thing. But for you, like what is that dream life right now look like for you? And I know it's changed in the past and will change in the future, but what does that dream life look like, and what's next for you this year?
Yeah, I think this year the most excited I am about is building our flagship store. Yeah. I just moved from Vancouver to Montreal a couple months ago, and this vision of building a flagship store, it's not just about retail, it's also about an experience, bring the community together and just having a space for that. It's been in my vision board for so long, but I think if I didn't move to Montreal, it wouldn't have happened, because it would have cost triple the amount to build in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just signed the contract for a 3-year lease right before this podcast, actually.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is that what the coffee was this morning for?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm really excited to build that out, design the space, see it come to life, it be in construction over the next couple months, and just see my vision come to reality. And I asked myself this question a couple years ago. It was like, if I didn't have VTable, what would my next business be? And I knew it was going to be about experiences. I didn't know what it would look like, but what I didn't think about is that I didn't have to start another business to build that. I could build that within VTable, and it didn't click in my head a couple years ago. But when I had this vision, I was like, oh my God, like this is my next business, but in my current business. I'm really excited to do that. I have an Olympic try at the end of April. I want to travel, not more because I traveled a lot last year, but moderate, finding that balance between go, but coming back to your space and just taking a moment to look around and reevaluate the lessons you've learned and be more present in life and just having higher standards with everything in life, people you hang out with, who you spend time with, the places you're going to, your goals, your vision, how you feel in your body. Actually, Alex Hormozi and Layla talked about that in an episode. It was like having higher standards. I listened to that end of last year, and I was like, that's my goal for this year, is like having higher standards for everything you do in life.
I love it. Yeah. Wait, okay, really quickly. I need your like go-to podcasts. Like what are the ones that you're listening to, or like your go-to people that you're listening to?
I like Chris Wilson, the UK guy.
Yeah.
Is it Modern Wisdom? Is that the podcast name? Yeah. So that one, I listened to Alex Hormozi in doses because he can be a lot sometimes.
He's very like, I don't care about your excuses. Exactly. Like, yeah. Versus like, I also really respect what you were talking about earlier about like, it's so hard to like find the balance of like living in flow state, following your intuition, and then also being like,
and then listening to that.
Yeah. And then some days it's like, well, I don't feel like doing it, but I know I'm going to feel better if I just like do the things.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's hard. But yeah. Anyway, I agree. I love what you said about in doses. Okay.
Yeah. So Alex Hormozi is kind of like the tough love you need when you need it. Like you need motivation. Like go listen to that. Right. Then actually I had a goal this year was to listen to 10 biographies.
I love that.
Or to read 10 biographies this year. So I'm listening to Lululemon right now. I was listening to Elon Musk. I think I have like 30 minutes left actually, so I need to finish that. That was a big book. And then I was also listening to Steve Jobs, but I was recently listening to a podcast from The Modern Wisdom.
Yeah,
I forgot who it's with, but that guy read like 400 biographies in a year or something like that, and he said that a lot of CEOs learn from reading biographies because most of the time, a lot of founders write their own biography. If not, it's like someone that did extensive research on like how they build their company, who they are, what they've learned. And so you learn a lot from listening to biographies. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my goal this year and I'm starting it. And
I love it.
I recommend that to anyone.
It's like free mentorship. Like you literally get...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Free access. You're probably... really hard to get a conversation in with these people, but listening to biographies, it's basically like them spoon feeding you their life lessons and what they've learned and how they've done it.
Yeah. I've also like my mentality now with books, I used to feel so much pressure that if I start something, like I have to like finish it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to finish that book. And now I've realized like take what I need and then like move on. Like if I start a book and I'm halfway through and it's just not what I need in that season of life, like it's okay if I don't
come back to it later.
And come back to it later. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. I just heard someone talk about that yesterday and I was like, that by reading biographies is truly like the best form of mentorship. It's like, what are you gonna really like, how much are you gonna, even if you did get a score copy date, which will probably never happen, like what that person is going through at that moment in their life might not even be like applicable
part of the conversation.
Exactly. Or like to where you are like in the journey. Anyway, really cool. Well, thank you so much for all of this. This conversation was amazing. You're a really cool person. I love Montreal, so maybe sometime I'll come skiing and we'll take laps or you can
please
come.
I know.
But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the Wealth and Wellness
Studio.
Thank you for having me. And I appreciate it. Also, Celine, if our listeners want to find you, where can they shop? Where can they find like your Instagram? Where do they see more of you?
Our Instagram handle is House of Vitae and our website is vitaeapparel.com. And I would also love to give the listeners 15% off. So you can insert the code after.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you.